Mason.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. I apologize if my voice sounds a little different from normal, slightly under the weather, and unfortunately, it did not give me the sweet dulcet tones of our Chiefs super fan Nick like I hoped it would, so you're just going to have to deal. This is the playoffs, guys. It has finally started. The regular season has ended. We are in the tournament, single elimination, and man, what a great start it has been. So we're going to kick things off with my game, which is the Seahawks taking on the Detroit Lions. So we've got the Detroit Lions coming to Seattle, facing my Seahawks at home. Tough draw for anybody, and we'll just get this out right out of the gate. It was not an incredibly competitive game. The Seahawks win 26-6. This was a game that just sort of kind of accelerated away from the Lions as time went on. The Lions went 3-and-out on their first couple possessions, as did the Seahawks. But then the Seattle running game, which has been sort of their hallmark for years and years going back under the Pete Carroll administration, but has been largely absent this year, finally seemed to have turned a corner. Thomas Rawls looked healthy for the first time this season. He set a franchise record for rushing yards in a playoff game with 161. That is amazing. Now, those of you who have been following along may know that he already owns the franchise record for rushing yards in a regular season game. So Thomas Rawls has the two best rushing performance records for the Seahawks in individual games from a yard standpoint. Russell Wilson was incredibly efficient, went 23 of 30 for 224 yards. Didn't need to throw that much with the way Thomas Rawls was running. That being said, the Detroit Lions, they weren't hopeless, they weren't hapless. Matthew Stafford actually played pretty well despite the finger. I really would have been curious to see what this game would have looked like if that sprained middle finger was healthy. But, you know, his wide receivers left at least 100 yards of offense on the field in drops. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat that. My old friend Golden Tate had one hit him. That would have been completely a first down, hit him right in the chest, and he couldn't bring it in. And that happened to Stafford at least four times. And things like that, you know, really could have had an effect on the complexion of this game. The wide receivers for the Seahawks, though, my goodness. I'm pretty sure at some point they went back in time and stole old Beckham Jr.'s mojo. Doug Baldwin and especially Paul Richardson were making the most ridiculous circus catches you could see. Paul Richardson had one for, you know, actually I'm just gonna get this off my chest right here. The Seahawks going for it on fourth down from like the three in the second quarter. That was a terrible call. That was a stupid call. The game is tied at 0-0 at this point. It's still early. Your running game is working great. Your defense is shutting down the Lions. What are you doing going for it? You have basically a guaranteed 3 points. I mean, unless for some reason you had reason to doubt your kicking game from that close, which seems odd to me, given that they kicked several other PATs and field goals. I don't understand. Terrible, terrible call. But it did result in a touchdown. And it resulted on a touchdown on a play where, before the ball was even halfway there was already a flag thrown for pass interference. Paul Richardson is somehow like sideways contorted. One hand is holding onto, I will freely admit, the face mask of the defender. But he does this like one-handed catch around the front of the defender and somehow reels that in for the touchdown. Absolutely incredible catch. Then he has another similar catch, minus the face mask, later in the game. Doug Baldwin has a catch for a big gain where the ball is basically on his butt, bouncing, but never actually touches the ground that they ended up overturning on a challenge. I mean, these guys came to play. Doug Baldwin now owns the team record for touchdowns in the postseason. And Baldwin is an all-time great Seahawk. He is such a good player. And I talked about it at the start of this year. People need to understand that he's one of the top wide receivers in the NFL. You know, went for 100 yards again, another touchdown, just what he does. From the Lions' standpoint, like I was saying, I thought Matthew Stafford played pretty well. Zach Zenner, he had a like one or two nice carries early, but other than that, he couldn't get anything going. That Lions offensive line, they held it pretty well pass blocking, but they couldn't open up anything for the run blocking. And that was really unfortunate for Zenner and really for Detroit's chances. I mean, you know, the formula for beating the Seahawks is win the time of possession battle, keep that defense on the field, you know, get the opposing offense into short possessions, and they just weren't able to pull that off. And I get Matthew Stafford, despite a line that doesn't look terrific, I think played pretty well given the circumstances and given the fact that, you know, probably 100 yards of 100 passing yards were left on the field, bouncing off of his players. But Marvin Jones did play pretty well. He had one particular nice long pass reception. Other than that, though, I mean, not a whole lot of help. And this game, it was just like the Seahawks were a little bit better, and every quarter that mattered more because it just accumulated, right? You know, a few more points for the Seahawks than the Lions, and on and on and on until eventually you arrive at this 26-6 final score. Not a lot of people thought the Lions had a great chance going into this game. I think that's fair. I think that given the way that they kind of limped into the playoffs and, you know, how poorly they played since Matthew Stafford's injury, I think that's totally fair. But they had a good year. I think Jim Bob Cooter is still doing tremendous things with Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford, I think, is an excellent quarterback. He played so well this year. Once he gets all healed up, you know, this is a team that if they have a good offseason, they could compete for that division. Meanwhile, my Seahawks are now heading towards Atlanta for a rematch with the Atlanta Falcons, a matchup that the Seahawks won in previously. This is going to be a test, though. That one's on the road, not at home. No Earl Thomas. So this is going to be a big one. Now, there is a chance we'll get CJ Procise back, which would be absolutely tremendous. But that's a significant test. But at least for now, I'm just going to revel in the victory. Seahawks 26, Detroit Lions 6.
All right, it is myself, James, as Houston Texans superfan, joined once again by the Oakland superfan, Monty. And, well, Monty, I mean, I guess we can agree that was nothing like Mexico City. Texans come out on top 27-14. Throughout the game, at least in the first quarter, it had the makings of a close game, a defensive struggle, or as we talked about a little bit online, a lack of offensive struggle. Both defenses played pretty good in the first quarter. You know, Nick Novak got the party started with a 50-yard field goal, and then Lamar Miller ran one in to give us a 10-point lead there fairly early on. You guys ended up getting 7, and then another 7 kind of meaningless at the end. I know a big disappointment for you, honestly kind of a disappointment for me as well. It would have been a great game, you know, had Carr been in or even McGoin been in, but that's a rough spot to put a first-time starter in on a playoff game, especially when Jadeveon Clowney looked like the number one overall pick that he was a couple years back.
Oh, that was just a total nightmare scenario from the Raiders' perspective. Obviously, the quarterback's what everyone talked about, but, I mean, when Donald Penn went down and wasn't going to be able to play, it's just Menelik Watson slid over. The first time he's ever played left tackle in his life against Jadeveon Clowney was like no chance. It was, I mean, every Twitter update that I saw just went from bad to worse. You know, Malcolm Smith is out going for a hamstring. Crabtree's going back for concussion protocols. Just like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Even the one thing I was kind of banking on, Marquette King was shanking punts, man. I was at least expecting to see some dancing out there. The Raiders had a couple plays. They botched one that could have been a touchback, but that was just gross, brutal to watch, and it was a total throwback to the Jamarcus Russell years where you had terrible quarterback play, terrible offensive line play, terrible defensive play, missed tackle. I mean, it was brutal to watch. And on top of all that, to make things worse, I mean, I know the stats look average, but I think that was probably Brock Osweiler's best game that I've watched him play, and that says a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, going off of that, you know, kind of looking back throughout the season on the games that Brock has played, and what's kind of giving me a lot of pause, you know, going forward, there was talk of how, oh, you know, maybe Brock has turned a corner and he's going to, live up to this contract, or maybe not necessarily live up to the contract, but make it seem like not a complete waste of money. You go back through all the games that he played this year, and his two best games were against the Oakland Raiders. You guys have struggled on defense. I think it's kind of a, fair to say, especially in the last, half of the season. So, going forward, I'm really hoping that this is just kind of a sign of better things to come for Brock, but you got to take the two data points with a little bit of caution, because it's, two good data points against a shaky defense.
I think you called out in the offseason Brock's contract. I mean, everyone reports the $72 million, but it's really only a 2-year deal. So this year's over. He's got next year to prove that he's the guy. And if not, you guys can kind of cut bait and move on. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I mean, quarterback play is huge. I mean, you obviously saw what the Raiders team fell apart without a good quarterback. You had a guy, you gave him a chance, two years to prove he can do it. And if not, you move on. So, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yep. Over the course of the 2 years, I mean, we'll pay him like $37 million, I think, over the 2 years, by the time you figure in the signing bonus and everything. We'll take a dead cap hit of $6 million, if I remember right, if we cut him before the third year on that contract. Which, if he's playing like this, you gotta look at cutting him, or at least restructuring that contract. Tom Savage is probably going to clear concussion protocol in time for the Patriots. Not that that necessarily matters, but that kind of highlights the problem with Tom Savage, and that he has been on the Texans now for several seasons. I think this is his third season with the team, and he's gotten a couple shots. It's hard to not get a shot when you're competing with Brock Osweiler, Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, et cetera. But when he gets his shots, he's always getting hurt. He's messed up his shoulder. He got a concussion this time. There was another time last year, I think that also might have been a shoulder injury, that ended his season on IR. I mean, it's not very hopeful when you're like, oh, okay, well, we'll just bring in Brandon Whedon as our backup quarterback. Like, that's never a good sign.
Well, I mean, I guess positives to take away from your guys' standpoint. I'm kind of I knew on Christmas Eve when Derek Carr broke his leg that the Raiders were going to be one and done in the playoffs. I mean, the odds were just stacking up against them. But, I mean, Brock Osweiler, to his credit, he ran one in, ran for a first down, showed a little bit of mobility for a 6'12" giant. And he was able to get D-Hop back into the game plan. I mean, he had a pretty good game. So that's going to be some positives rolling into next week when you go visit the Evil Empire.
Oh, absolutely. Back-to-back good games for Hopkins. A good game coming back for Lamar Miller, who has missed, who didn't play last week, and, was just kind of getting healthy again. So that's, that's obviously a positive thing. I was hoping to see your guys' offensive line play a little bit better, just to get a good preview of what we may have faced if we had the ability to go up to Kansas City with a, Miami upset of the Steelers, but that's not exactly looking likely. You summed it up there. Raiders are kind of one and done, but this has got to be the first season in a while that you guys definitely met expectations and have higher expectations going into next year, don't you think?
I think if you and I had been drinking some beers together in the summertime and you told me the Raiders were going to win 12 games and make it to the playoffs, I would have been pretty ecstatic. I mean, it's been a long drought for them to get there, and the arrow's definitely pointing up. The one thing that I would say, and, maybe I'm an eternal optimist or whatever, but it just goes to show you how good quarterback play is, for the teams that look atrociously bad like the Raiders have the last 2 weeks. They literally were a Super Bowl contender when their quarterback was playing at a high level. So for all those bottom dwellers like the Raiders had been for the past 13 years, if you finally get a quarterback and, especially get them through the draft, you can afford to bring in a little bit of help on the free agent side. I mean, hope is not all lost. The one thing that was kind of disappointing for me, and I guess, Connor Cook, what are you going to do? But for Amari Cooper, I've been on the Slack group with Neil back and forth, and I think he's an immense talent, but boy, there are games when he just disappears. And I know Cook is, throwing up a couple jump balls and they weren't really giving him that much of a chance, but even in a blowout situation, when you guys are kind of dropping back into a prevent shell, You would think to see Amari Cooper make more than two catches for 10 yards. But, I mean, maybe I'm just bitter and salty and Connor Cook really had no chance and neither did Cooper. But I was kind of hoping to see something from our young superstar. But you're definitely right. Going into next year, I think the Raiders are going to be right in the thick of it. It's a war of attrition. If your team is healthy and hot going into the playoffs, you got a chance. And if your team is on IR, then you are going to, you know, probably get your lunch handed to you on national TV. And everyone who doesn't really follow the Raiders, unfortunately, if this is the only game that you saw, you just go right back to the Jamarcus Russell years. The Raiders are terrible. But I'm telling you, this team is good. They're young and they're going to be strong next year. It's going to be fun to watch.
Oh, absolutely. And I wouldn't be too worried about Amari Cooper as a fan of a team who frequently had DeAndre Hopkins on the back of the milk carton this year. You know, even in blowout situations, you'd think, oh, he's got to be able to get, you know, 5 for 50 or something like that. But, you know, when the quarterback play just isn't there, it doesn't matter how soft of a defense they're playing against, you're just not going to be able to get involved.
I wasn't aware your defense was number one in the league in yardage, but they are good and they are young, right? I mean, your defensive backs are all relatively young. Jadeveon Clowney looks like a beast. J.J. Watt, if he could, you know, sounds like he's taking his time to come back and do it the right way for next year. I mean, the Texans and the Raiders, maybe we'll get to have a similar conversation next year with our team, kind of our biggest stars on our teams not on the IR.
Well, that would definitely be a good game to see. You know, Derek Carr against J.J. Watt and company. So, yeah, hopefully we'll be able to see that next year in the playoffs. That, you know, I'll take getting penciled in for the playoffs every year.
Well, the last order of business, I guess, is I actually managed to find some Tecate and some Sol beer, and I am going to put down a six-pack of cheap Mexican beer to go with my Taco Bell Grande challenge. Maybe I'll do some live tweeting and put some photos up there so that you can mock me on the internet, as, you know, all good super fans should be doing. So cheers to you. Good luck next week. I think that can, you know, echo the sentiments of the entire planet. Go Texans next week in Foxborough.
Well, I do not mind having a couple of bandwagon fans on board. Ideally, one of those bandwagon fans would be able to throw the ball downfield and would apply for a starting QB position, but I think we'll be stuck with Brock next week, which isn't looking great.
Well, it's better than Connor Cook, so take it for what it's worth.
Absolutely. Well, Monty, thank you. Sorry for the short end to your season, and even more sorry for that Grande meal.
I'll let you know how everything turns out.
All right. Thanks.
Salud.
Green Bay Brian here, joined by the New York Giants superfan, Sam. Sam, I imagine you've had better days. Maybe, I know you were expecting a win coming into this game. What happened that went against what you were expecting?
We ran into Aaron Rodgers, and as bad as all the Giants played, I don't think we were going to beat Aaron Rodgers on a day where he looked like this. That being said, we made, I think, 3 or 4 mistakes between the end of that second quarter and the beginning of the third, and Aaron Rodgers took advantage of it, and you saw why he should be the MVP, why he's the best quarterback in the league. Well, I don't think it's even close, really, in terms of quarterbacks. He just had receiver and weapon after weapon go down, and he just played better and better. So congratulations to him and the Packers. Miss me with all that boat talk. That's not the reason Odell didn't play well. He had a bad game. But if anybody thinks that world-class athletes are affected by being on a boat on Monday for a game that took place on Sunday, I don't really have time for those kind of opinions. Most probably it was just terrible weather, first playoff game, a lot of expectations. It happens. It's something to learn on. It's something to build on. But you must be feeling great. This game probably went exactly how you were expecting it to. I mean, hoping it, you're not expecting.
Yeah, I mean, definitely I did not expect to score quite so many points. That's a really good defense. That's going to be a good defense for quite a while. And kind of a tale of two games, honestly. I think they showed the graphic. The first quarter, really the first 28 minutes, the Packers looked like garbage. The receivers couldn't get open. Rodgers was holding the ball. I think he took, I counted five sacks. I think three of them I would place on Rodgers' responsibility as opposed to the line. So, I think after the, you know, we converted that touchdown late in the half, then got the ball back, which was a big stop at the 2 minute warning, and a really nice job by Mike McCarthy. This is not something that he typically does very well, but that clock management there at the end of the half really set us up to have a chance to go up by, I can't even remember what we were up by at half, but just a nice job by him to call those timeouts and to really set the offense up with the opportunity to throw that last touchdown at the end of the half there, the Hail Mary, which, by the way, I mean, there's nobody better at the Hail Mary than Aaron Rodgers. There's nobody better at a lot of things than Aaron Rodgers, but that in particular is something that really sticks out the last 2 years. He's been able to convert on quite a few of those. Randall Cobb also had a huge game. So, that was nice to see somebody step up in the wake of the Jordy Nelson injury. I'll be a little bit surprised if we have him for next week, maybe be missing him the rest of the way here. That looked like, if it's not broken ribs, it's definitely bruised ribs. And you could tell right away that that was something that affected him. Just curious, is there anything that you would want to say as far as the offseason plans go for the New York Giants? Obviously, you'll be out of the playoffs here, so start thinking about the future, which looks bright to me as an outside observer, but from the inside, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, this defense, they gave up 38 points, but I think that's just a combination of when things stopped going well, everything went to shit fairly quickly. That DRC injury doesn't seem big, but he's been a huge part of what we did. And I guess you could say losing Nelson, losing DRC, it kind of evens out. But that defense really just looked gassed towards the end. Bobby Rainey catching it in bounds and then going out at the three and going three on out afterwards didn't help that defense after a long drive by Rodgers. So that side of the ball, I'm okay with. I mean, marginal improvements at linebacker would be good. I think we're fine in the secondary. Eli Apple's a stud. Janoris Jenkins played great this year. DRC is a great player. People kind of forget. People wrote him off after those Eagles seasons. But that side of the ball, we're fine. Or we have to decide what we're going to do with JPP. But I think that kind of is going to be reflected into what they think they could do in the draft if they can get another pass rusher. It's a pretty good draft in terms of pass rushing. So we'll see what they do there. That side of the ball, Landon Collins, I mean, I think you saw he's all over the place. He's going to be one of the best safeties in the league for a long time. He's great. The other side of the ball, we just need an offensive line, and we need to figure out how long Eli has left. His arm, he looks like he's making throws he thinks he should make, and his arm is just, it's a little bit behind. It's a little bit slow. So I think those things are things they're really going to have to work on. The receivers, they're set. It's really the two tackle positions. I think Richburg and Pugh are good players. I think they'll stay around. And then that's really it. It's tough because, you know, this season, if we're probably bottom half in the league in offense, I think we're 25th. I think, you know, if we move up to 15th and just be league average, I think, you know, we're one of the best teams in the league. So it's these marginal improvements that we have to make, and we have to kind of look forward to the future because I don't think Eli has many throws in him left. Did you see any, like, what did you see about the Giants? I mean, the Packers, I don't know how you guys did it on defense. It kind of, you know, thinking back about the game, I think McAdoo started running the ball for some reason when he's been doing it all season. I mean, what do you see that the Packers need to improve on? I mean, this game, they really did everything well. Or you just think you guys got to play the same way against Dallas and you'll come out successful?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I do think the offense is really clicking. I mean, there's no shame from the Giants standpoint. You guys ran into a buzzsaw. This is as good as we've seen our offense play in quite a while, I think. And then two people in particular that really stuck out to me. I think David Bakhtiari must have played a great game. I didn't really have a chance to watch him specifically, but I didn't hear anything about Olivier Vernon. I wasn't sure if he was even really still playing for the Giants. And the other guy I was going to highlight too, and you sort of alluded to it a little bit there, but Ladarius Gunter on the defense, we had him pretty much shadowing Odell Beckham Jr. And, I think there's something to be said for some of the drops that he had, but a lot of the pass defense actually played pretty well today. There were a lot of contested balls, and a lot of plays where, if the Giants did catch the ball, that we had a guy there in place to make the tackle. The first guy made the tackle and really kept that offense from really breaking any really big plays. So a great game by our defense. I will admit it was not something that I was expecting. I was expecting that we would see a lot more aerial attack against Green Bay. That's been kind of the area we've struggled. And I think you're right that McAdoo really started to get away from the pass. The first couple of drives there, the Packers really were getting torched, and we were really fortunate, honestly. I think we were more lucky than good on defense today with all the drops that the Giants had. But at the end of the game, you look up at the score, and it's another instance where the Packers really didn't give up a whole lot of points, despite some of the deficiencies they have in the back end. As far as Dallas goes, I think I would rather actually play them than the Falcons. I think when we have to match up against an experienced quarterback and a really good, arguably the best wide receiver in the game, that's not really something that I think that I would want for us to do. Granted, Dallas presents some of their own problems. There's a little bit more mobility in Dak Prescott, and obviously that offensive line is phenomenal. And Ezekiel Elliott has also played a great year. But, this offense is clicking. And if we can get up early on the Cowboys and kind of force them into more of a passing offense than they're used to, I think that does play to our advantage. So I think that is kind of the game plan that I'm hoping to see out of Green Bay when we have to travel to Dallas next week. Anything else you'd want to close with here? What kind of advice might you give to somebody that's about to take on the Cowboys? The Giants obviously had a lot of success against them this year. What do you attribute that to?
I think it was just the Giants. I don't think those Dallas receivers could beat the Giants cornerbacks when we were healthy. Janoris Jenkins shut out Dez Bryant, and the rest of them followed suit. So we were able to really, our defense is great. I think that the run defense we have is, I don't think Green Bay maybe had 50 yards on the ground. If that, I don't know what happened at the end of the game.
Yeah,
I kind of turned it
I don't
off.
Think so.
But big stops on four. We just play the run really well without sacrificing a pass defense to do it, which I think is the only way to beat Dallas. But I think, are we both in agreement that this boat situation, I just saw a lot of it on, I just, Joe Buck over the course of the game, I think one of his quotes after that was an overthrow to Beckham on the right sideline. And Joe Buck said, fair or not, people are going to be bringing up the boat thing. And I just think, it's ridiculous, right? It's not just me being a Giants homer.
I tend to agree that it probably didn't play any or enough of a difference in this game to really make the difference in the outcome. But you and I talked about it in the preview that you put more pressure on yourself when you are kind of videotaped or photographed, or the news gets out that you're taking Monday of the start of the playoffs to go and relax in Miami on a boat. So you're right. I don't think that ultimately that it made a big deal, but I think you may hear a lot about it this offseason because it's definitely not a good look for the wide receiver group there, especially given all the drops they had against the Packers. So, it's one of those things. I don't think it was made the difference in the outcome, but I don't think it helped them either.
Yeah, I think it, in and of itself, if it didn't become such a thing, it would have made no difference. I think these wide receivers were trying to prove a little more than they should have, and I think that's, we kind of got away from them a little bit. It's a young group, though, so hopefully we'll see some improvements, some maturity there. Again, I don't think it affected their performance. I think the media and the surrounding brouhahas that happened about it and, coming out before the game and they're without any shirts on, I think it all kind of got them into a place that they were too emotional, which can happen from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what got them out of sorts. Not that it would have mattered. I think, Aaron Rodgers putting up 38 points that no matter what, and the Giants weren't. But, you kind of don't want to give the other team any bulletin board material. You don't want to deal with any of that conflict during game week. And I think that's kind of where I come out on that. But I hope you guys beat Dallas. That's all I got to say, because we would have. So.
Yeah, definitely. We talked a little bit about it already. They're the team I'd rather play between them and Atlanta. Whether that's foolish on my part or not, I don't know. I wanted to get one more thing from you, though. You talked a little bit about Eli earlier, trying to decide what to do with him. What do you think they should do with Eli? How many years left does he have? Are you looking for a replacement there this offseason? Maybe somebody to groom, or do you think he's got a little bit more gas left in the tank?
I think they need to take somebody in this draft that they think will be their quarterback in the future. I thank him for everything he's done. I just think he was dealing with not the best physical traits and not the best skill set, and he used a lot of his brains and a lot of his experience to get him out of those situations. But he's just losing a tiny bit comparatively. I'm not, obviously he's an extremely skilled athletic player, but comparatively, when he drops those few percentage points in his athletic ability, he's not able to make up for it anymore. And I think it's only going to continue going downhill. I think we saw it happen to Peyton the same way. Just a lot of hits. Eli plays every game. He's older already. So I think it's time to move on. That being said, we have a good team next year. We don't need a great quarterback to compete. I think they take somebody in the second, third round, maybe fourth round, to see what they can do from there. They'll be picking in the 20s. I think it's going to be one of those weird years where quarterbacks go crazy early because it's not really a good one. So I don't know. I'd like to see them pick up somebody later, somebody they think they can develop. I think Eli's done. I mean, did you see anything differently? I mean, you play him. Were you scared at any point of Eli today? I mean, he had a couple of good throws, but it was mostly to wide open receivers.
Yeah, I'll admit I was nervous to start the game. Obviously, we looked really bad on offense initially there, and then we scored the touchdown. We went for it on that fourth down, which, frankly, fourth and inches, I didn't actually mind going for it. I didn't particularly care for the call. Anytime you're trying to grind out fourth and inches with a converted wide receiver at running back, that's not necessarily the play call that I would like to see. I think something a little more creative, or even if you're going to do that, give it to Kristen Michael or to Aaron Ripkowski would be even better. So after you guys stopped us on that fourth down and were able to quickly score that touchdown, I thought, oh boy, here we go. Momentum shifting, but Packers really got back on track that very next drive and were able to get another touchdown to give a little bit more separation there in the box score. So I felt a little bit better after that. And then obviously the game started to get away from the Giants a little bit there at the end. We talked a lot about it already. Rodgers is on fire right now. And if he continues to play this way, good luck to everybody that tries to stop him. I do think that the Giants are probably the best defensive team in the playoffs. So to hang 38 on a team like that in the wild card round certainly should give us confidence. But we also have a pretty tough matchup in front of us with Dallas on the line here in the divisional round. So with that, I think we can wrap it up here. Sam, it's been great chatting with you. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot next year. Better luck next year, Sam.
Yeah, well, good luck this year. I think the Packers are one of the least objectionable teams winning the Super Bowl to me, so there's that.
Awesome. I could not be happier to hear that, Sam. Me too, for that matter. Take care. Good talking to you.
Bye.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, here with Monty, the Raiders superfan, talking about neither of our teams. Today we're talking about the Dolphins and the Steelers. How are you doing, Monty?
I'm doing well. I think, listening to Andy, he was, like me, starting to drink a little bit of the Kool-Aid, the backup quarterback Kool-Aid, and I think he bought himself a pair of Nikes, and I don't know, hopefully we'll check on him tomorrow. We'll hear from him.
Yeah, I'm hoping he is still with us come tomorrow morning. So this game was, let's be honest, not close. The Pittsburgh Steelers went on to absolutely crush Miami, 30-12. What the heck happened?
This game felt like it was over before it even started. Two big plays from Antonio Brown. In my opinion, he's the best wide receiver in the NFL. And this weekend is kind of that example, right? I mean, Odell Beckham makes some killer plays, but he had a rough go in his first playoff outing. Antonio Brown made some killer plays today when it counted. He's so fast. He's so quick off the line. As soon as he caught the ball, he was off to the races, and the Steelers were up 20 to 3 before you even realized this game was there, and they kind of had the game in hand from there. And after Antonio Brown kind of started the game off, Le'Veon Bell proving he's one of the best running backs in the league, obviously. I mean, but just he's fun to watch. Like, he's got this patient running style where he kind of hops behind the line, gives his linemen a chance to make some blocks, and then he just hits the hole and goes. Like, he is a fun running back. He's smooth. He's quick. And I think the story that I saw is he set the Steelers' all-time postseason rushing record and went for 167 and 2 touchdowns on 29 carries. So the dude's a total stud, and the Pittsburgh Steelers offense, much like the rest of the league, is just too much for the Dolphins to handle today.
Yeah, I mean, this one, you know, the final score is looks closer than the game, I think, honestly was. Because you're right. I mean, the game was basically over in the first quarter. So let's talk a little bit about some of the kind of key stories here. Let's start with the quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger had a pretty good game. Obviously, it helps to have, as you put it, the best wide receiver in the National Football League. But it was pointed out that he seemed to have some, let's call it, custom footwear during the post-game press conference. You want to tell us what that's all about?
You know, from my point of view, I think Big Ben knew it was a playoff game. He saw all the cameras and the microphone, and he pulled out his custom Aircast that he keeps in his locker just to make sure that he's getting some attention. I mean, from my point of view, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell are the story of this game, and that just didn't sit right with Mr. Roethlisberger. So he pulled out a cast so that the bottom scroll on ESPN and NFL Network were sure to say, Ben left with an Aircast, and you know, he assures us he's going to be out there on the field next week. But I don't know. I haven't seen what the actual injury is. It happened on the last game. I think the story is, I mean, you know, Derek Carr broke his leg with a lead in the fourth quarter. There was like 10 minutes left, so you can always ask what was he doing out there at that point in the game. But I don't know. I'm sure he'll play. I don't know what the injury is. Maybe it's just to keep the swelling down, but. He's definitely the story going into next week when, in my opinion, it should be Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, but that's just Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, knowing Ben Roethlisberger, I'm willing to bet he did something like he, I don't know, clipped the nail too short on one of his toes, needed the walking boot. If it was as severe as like a stub toe, he probably would have just been carted out to the press conference.
Yeah, you know, He's an awesome quarterback. I don't know. Ben Roethlisberger, I don't know. If Greg were here, I would talk some more smack, but I feel like I'd just be piling on to him without anyone to kind of give us that objective point of view. But, yeah, Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown are the story, despite what you'll read on the bottom line.
Go ahead and tweet your best anti-Ben Roethlisberger jokes at NFU Podcast. So let's talk a little bit about the quarterback on the other sideline. The backup for the Miami Dolphins, Moore. How did he do? I'll be honest. The only takeaway I have from him is I'm pretty sure I saw his spirit leave his body at one point after being hit by Bud Dupree.
Yeah, I think he got the meme treatment on Twitter after his hit, and I kind of got in. Little healthy debate with Neil, the superfan for the Redskins, when it happened. I didn't think it was a dirty hit. I mean, he was running with the ball outside of the pocket. If it had been a running back, you wouldn't even think twice. He happened to just throw the ball out a split second before Dupree leveled him. Maybe he targeted a little bit high, but, I mean, this is tackle football. I didn't think it was dirty, and I'm, you know, the biggest Steeler hater that I know. I mean, I thought it was an objective play. Dupree really laid him out, and he was lobbying to get back in there. Is an impossible task. I mean, the Steelers jumped out to a huge lead, and that Steeler defense just, they had the upper hand from the first quarter on. So he's a backup quarterback. He did the best he could. He actually had a good completion percentage. He was 29 of 36. He threw one interception, which is one less than Ben Roethlisberger, but he just did not get much help from his defense in the first half, and it was just too much to overcome. But, yeah, there's going to be some memes of Matt Moore on the internet for a while, probably the rest of the playoffs. So if you haven't seen it, definitely dial up that hit. Yeah. Make up your own mind if you thought it was a dirty hit, and I'm sure he'll be fined. He was penalized, but I don't know. It's tough for the defenders in full speed to try to make a play, and I didn't think there was intent. Maybe there was. I didn't think so. You be the judge.
Yeah, I did notice that somebody took the time to go and update his Wikipedia page to list him as having died on January the 7th, 2017. So once again, the internet is undefeated. Let's talk about some of the other interesting things here. Miami won the previous matchup largely on the back of Jay Ajayi, who ran for something like 200 and some yards. I take it he did not run for 200 and some yards this time.
Nope, he only had 33 yards today. I think a part of that might be a bit of game flow, right? Pittsburgh jumped out all over Miami, and it was going into the second quarter. They were up big. So, I mean, maybe they wanted to get him more than 16 carries or not, but they were all over him this time. This was the Le'Veon Bell show as opposed to Jay Ajayi this time around. I don't know what your take is on Ajayi. I mean, he had some huge games this year. I'm curious to see what he's going to do next year, but the Steelers defense was more than he could handle for this year, for this week.
Yeah, I definitely have to see more from him. He was so boom or bust. I mean, if he didn't run for 250 yards, he ran for like 40 yards. So I definitely want to see him again. Let's talk about my favorite play this game, though, which I just watched a few minutes ago on the highlights. One of the Dolphins on a you already know what I'm talking about. PAT attempt on a field goal attempt. Tries to do his best Cam Chancellor impression and goes to leap over the offensive line, and to his credit, he clears it, doesn't touch anybody. Beautiful jump. Only problem is the play hasn't actually started yet, so he lands and realizes that nobody else has moved, and you just see him kind of drop his head and walk back. The worst part of that play is that 5 yards on that penalty was enough for a first down. Oh man,
that's kind of the way the Dolphins' day had gone. First time I saw Cam Chancellor do that move, I was just like, God, that guy's an animal. And now I've seen a few people try to do it, but nobody has been as successful as Cam. Nope. And yeah, he cleared it. He landed, stuck the landing. Only problem was they didn't snap the ball, and that was kind of a microcosm of kind of the Dolphins' day in Pittsburgh.
Yep. You see the holders kind of look up at him like, what the hell are you doing? And then pro tip to all the, I'm sure, hundreds of NFL players who listen to this podcast, if you're going to go for that, make sure that there's more than 5 yards to go just in case you mess it up.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. Yeah, I don't know. I think if Andy was here, and you know, he's been on a few calls, I think he's got to be pretty happy with the way the Dolphins' season ended up. He's got to be feeling pretty good with his head coach. I think the only real question is, and I don't know if you've got a take on it, is if Tannehill's the guy. And if so, I think they're in good shape. If he's not, and boy, it's hard to find a quarterback. I mean, you can trade a first and a fourth round pick, but that doesn't always work out.
Yeah, that's definitely true, but I certainly feel good about the Dolphins. I think that they took a clear step forward. The second year in, it should be the second year for a lot of these players in kind of a lot of new systems, the new flow. So I think that, I mean, and they're on a good path. It really is, you know, the biggest question mark is definitely a quarterback. For the Steelers, however, coming off of this win, obviously they advance in the next round. They're going to be taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. Quick impressions of that matchup.
Huge game. I think Kansas City's pass rush versus a maybe hobbled up Ben Roethlisberger, maybe just actor Ben Roethlisberger. But I think that Kansas City defense versus the Ben Roethlisberger's offense should be fun to watch. And I think the real matchup will be Le'Veon Bell. I think if you're going to attack Kansas City, you got to be able to run. So if Le'Veon Bell can do what he did this week, Pittsburgh should be able to go into Kansas City. Last time they met, they ran him out of the stadium, but that was in Pittsburgh. And one of the greatest stadiums in all the NFL is Arrowhead. And it should be a much better matchup. I'm looking forward to it. This weekend, we kind of had some duds. So hopefully next weekend's divisional round, we'll have a little bit closer games.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Monty, I really appreciate you coming on with me talking Steelers and Dolphins. You enjoy your off season.
Yeah, we'll talk about that on another show, my friend. You take care of yourself, and I'm sure I'll talk with you soon.
That's good. All right, everybody, that will do it for another Next Fan Up podcast. Want to thank all the super fans for participating. Want to thank all the super fans for participating throughout the year. Please reach out to us, guys. You can reach us on our email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at NFUPodcast. You can also find us on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. But, man, so we are all set for the division round. We've got Houston taking on New England, Pittsburgh taking on Kansas City in the AFC. And in the NFC, we've got Green Bay versus Dallas and Seattle versus Atlanta. Next weekend is going to have some incredible football. I am so excited for it. I really can't wait. So, in the meantime, thank you for listening, and there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
All right, guys, that will do it for another Next Fan Up podcast.